Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, May 21st. I'm Ray Graff. Adventures in Radios today as we welcome physical therapist Matthew Goodemote, who is here to help you to answer questions about physical therapy. If you're sore all day long and all you do is complain, my knee, ow, my shoulder, my back, oh, my thighs are hurting today, this is the guy who will talk you off the ledge. 800-348-2551. If you want to talk to Matthew Goodemote, 800-348-2551. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Physical therapy, Matthew Goodemote. Your aches, coming up after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Joining us today is Matthew Goodemote, a highly respected orthopedic physical therapist with over 25 years' experience. He specializes in treating back and neck pain and sports injuries and has worked with a diverse range of athletes, including pros, Olympians, Division I, All-Americans, triathletes, elite runners, and dedicated weekend warriors. Matthew holds a diploma from the McKenzie Institute, Titleist Performance Institute certifications in golf performance, and a certification in applied functional sciences. He's also the founder of Goodemote Sports and Performance, where he works with active individuals and collaborates with local high schools to establish strength and conditioning programs designed to optimize athletic performance and reduce injury risks. If you have a question, give us a call right now, 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551 or email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Matthew Goodemote, how are you?
Hi, Ray. I'm doing well.
What's happening at the shop?
Oh, the shop. So mostly right now what I'm spending my time doing is helping Broad Auburn Perth develop a sports and strength program.
For the school?
The school.
Wow, yes, that's great. So how do you go about doing that?
Well, I go a few days a week, and I have started just by teaching them how to lift properly. So we started with modified track as the youngest group, and all the way through all the different athletes. 100-some-odd kids come through the doors, so it's a lot.
Do you find that most kids don't know how to lift properly?
No, there's a strong percentage that are really good and pick it up quickly, and there's also a strong percentage that needs a lot of instruction.
All right, give me an example.
So just doing a basic squat, for example, there's kids who have difficulty keeping their ankle and foot in a straight position going with where their knee joint goes. So you'll see a lot of the toe pointing out to the side and the knee caving inward.
Yeah.
And that creates a stress on the joint. And instructions are challenging because there's not a familiarity with the movement. And so I have to go through a lot of different basic kind of just let's bend the knee.
Yeah.
Let's bend the knee and keep the foot straight. And again, a big chunk of them get it immediately. And
are you talking about free weights?
I am, yeah. So the training that I did while I was over in Denmark revolved around exercise physiology principles and specifically how to lift weights and help that for athletic performance or just physical performance, but specifically for athletic performance. So as an example, a lot of times the mentality is the Arnold Schwarzenegger lift, which is 8 to 12 repetitions to try to get big muscles, but that doesn't develop the fast twitch muscles.
The fast, what now?
Fast twitch.
What the heck is a fast
twitch
muscle?
So the difference of a sprinter versus an endurance runner.
Okay.
So the sprinters
same muscle, right?
Sort of. The same muscle groups, yes. Yeah. So if we just took the calf muscles, for example, there's a percentage of fibers within the muscle that are for fast twitch, which makes you explosive, run fast, jump high. And then there's endurance muscles, which are called slow twitch. And so the slow twitch, obviously, for endurance, allow you to go long distances. So fast twitch muscles is for athletic performance. So that means the repetition range is lower, but the weights are heavier. And so where a lot of people are afraid to do weights, especially with teenagers, the goal is to, A, have good technique, because without technique, we don't touch weights. But once we get good technique, then it's to start to just let the body tell us what the weight should be. So there's some kids who have progressed rapidly and are doing very heavy weights, and there's other kids who I'm still working on technique.
Now, if a school district or a gym had machines, does that encourage proper form?
No.
Really? You can still be bad even if you're on a shoulder press machine or one of those.
So yes and no. So my first thought went to no, that rapid, abrupt answer. Functional movement is something like doing a squat or going up and down stairs, and a machine does not mimic that type of movement. So for example, a squat, your foot is touching the ground, but doing a knee extension in the machine at the gym, your foot's not touching the ground. So they're different movements. They require different function out of the muscle. They affect the joint differently, and the results are different. They're both valuable, but they're valuable for different reasons. And the machines also, I'm 6'3", so when I get on a machine, they don't always fit me appropriately. So to do the shoulder press as an example, that's actually one of the worst because it can put your shoulders in a terrible position and you can definitely strain your shoulders. So, and again, a lot of people are afraid of free weights, but they're not afraid of machines. And there's plenty of machines out there hurting people every day.
Hurt myself so badly doing shoulder press one time. I got married and like took some time off, and my brother said, "You got it. We got to go back to the gym." So we went to the gym, and he was doing the full rack on the machine.
Yeah,
I said, "Okay, let's just jump in."
Yeah,
did the full rack. Yeah. Did, I don't know, 10 reps or whatever. Couldn't move. Couldn't sleep in a bed. Couldn't do anything for weeks at a time. I did damage. I don't even know what happened.
Yeah. Well, again, if you didn't set on the machine properly, then
that's likely. By the way,
then you start to try to compensate and use the wrong muscle groups to lift.
Yeah.
And then if you do too heavy, too fast with poor technique, then I'm sure your muscles and joints were not really happy.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Our guest today is Matthew Goodemote. It's physical therapy. The number is 800-348-2551. And the email is voxpop@wamc.org. Dean Altamont writes in, "For the last 6 months, my 70-year-old husband has been going to a chiropractor for lower back pain. Very little improvement. Would you recommend a scan of some kind? Chiropractor never suggests a scan."
How long?
6 months, her 70-year-old husband has been going to a chiropractor.
So... it makes me just question a lot of things there. So 6 months with little to no results typically means A, it's time to choose a different chiropractor or different practitioner. But yes, within that time frame, it's really unusual for no scans to be done. Now, I can say for myself, there's times where if the diagnosis is pretty clear, there's no real value to the scan. The scan is meant to confirm the diagnosis. So if you have a suspicion of degeneration, there's certain historical things. People say certain things bother them, and then how they move will tell you, and you get about 90% just from that. Mm. And so the 10% left is, a scan to confirm that that's what it is, and it's not something else that's hidden there. For a 70-year-old, there's definitely degeneration. It would be highly unusual otherwise. He may have stenosis, in which case stenosis doesn't make significant progress with things like adjustments or manual techniques. It has to be exercise. It has to be strengthening. So, six months is a long time for no scans. Does he need one? I'm not sure.
Okay. You can't really tell from here.
No.
Our guest today is Matthew Goodemote. It's physical therapy. 800-348-2551 is the number. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. One more email, then we'll take a break, and then we'll hit the phones and go back to the email bag as needed. This is from Nick. "I work outside, ride a bike everywhere. However, I went to physical therapy for a strained knee injury last autumn. I'm heartfully grateful to have gone. They also pointed out something in my gait to really improve future life. Much thanks to all the PTs out there who deserve more appreciation from the community. For this month, I'm climbing on ladders, painting, and not used to it, even with lots of experience. Are there any specific things you tell painters or workers to do, stretching or otherwise?"
Well, I generally just do general mobility for something like that. For a painter, though, there's two primary areas, especially with overhead, and it's going to be shoulders and neck. Neck in particular, if you're looking up a lot, that can definitely create some problems. And then general mobility would be just like range of motion exercises of the cervical spine and thoracic spine, primarily extension-based, which is bending backwards. Shoulders need general mobility, so all the ranges are
But you're good. Not a stretching guy, though, right?
No, that's why I'm saying mobility. So gentle stretches. So the difference to me is a mobility is trying to get the joints and soft tissue able to move through their normal range of motion safely. And so mobility exercises or stretches for mobility would be like a 10-second type of stretch, whereas flexibility, that's going to be a whole different beast, and that's going to be 30 to 90 seconds, and that's what I don't find particularly valuable.
We're joined today by Matthew Goodemote. It's Physical Therapy Today. The number to call is 800-348-2551, or you can email us, voxpop@wamc.org. We'll be back. Okay, the lockbox is open. Just a couple of things, business here at WAMC. The lockbox is open for our June fund drive. All you got to do to help out is go to WAMC.org and make a pledge. Doesn't have to be any amount, $1, $2, $100, whatever. Second thing, the June fund drive begins Monday, the 2nd of June. It's right around the corner. We need volunteers to take phone calls, enter data. If you want to be a volunteer, it can occasionally be fun. Go to wamc.org/volunteering or call us at 800-323-9262. You know, there are some fun moments in a fun drive.
Yes.
I can tell you one thing.
Yes.
We never yell at the volunteers.
Yeah.
We yell at each other.
Yeah.
Especially if the fun drive goes a few years. No, the volunteers are treated like gold.
Yeah.
So if you want to find out more about that, wamc.org/volunteering or 800-323-9262. It's Physical Therapy Today on the show. Matthew Goodemote is our guest. Nancy is in Red Hook. Hello, Nancy.
Hey, hi. How are you guys doing?
Good. Well, how are you?
I'm doing okay. I had just a quick question. Back in January, I fell and sustained a concussion to the back of my head, and I've had tinnitus since about 2 weeks after. My neurologist and I today discussed going to physical therapy or chiropractor or acupuncture. Mm-hmm. We touched on chiropractic. She said maybe acupuncture, possibly, but we didn't touch on physical therapy. Would physical therapy help with this?
It's difficult to know for certain, but it's definitely worth trying.
And there's for a concussion?
Yeah. Physical therapists are actually one of the primary sources of percussion rehab. And they're specifically trained for it. So there's going to be physical therapists out there who have concussion rehab certifications. And I'm not sure in the area who that would be specifically, but they definitely do. And there's a whole variety of tests that they would run for physical therapy purposes to identify if a physical therapist, their approach could help you. And generally speaking, those who have this training are exceptional at their job. So I would highly recommend it. And often the people, believe it or not, who have it are sports related because they have to deal with the athletes who have concussions. And so you're going to look into a sports physical therapy clinic or a rehab clinic. Can I mention names? No, I won't. So there's rehab clinics in the area that specialize in post-head trauma injuries, and they're in the Capital District region.
Okay.
And those places would also have certified therapists who specialize in this kind of therapy.
All right, Nancy, thank you so much for the call. It's 800-348-2551 if you have a question for physical therapist Matthew Goodemote today. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. Barbara writes in, do physical therapists treat TMJ?
Yes, yes.
Now, TMJ is that thing in your jaw,
right? Temporomandibular joint, yes.
Right. So what's up with that, and how do you do anything?
Well, it's a joint, so physical therapists pretty much treat all joints.
And, okay.
But, again, similar to what I just said about concussions, there are specialists. And the people who are specialists, they have certifications in treating TMJ. And there's things that you can do orally, manually, where you can do manual techniques to the muscles and on the inner part of the mouth. They wear gloves, of course. And they can do also adjustments or mobilizations to that joint, and it is often highly effective.
Really?
Yes. My buddy, who is a physical therapy assistant, he does manual techniques, and again, very, very effective. And the manual techniques can be in the cervical spine as much as they can be in the TMJ joint. So pretty much anywhere around the head, neck, and shoulder areas is worth getting treated. Yeah.
It's Physical Therapy Today on Vox Pop. Our number is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or you can email the program at voxpop@wamc.org. Barb writes in, I'm female and in my late 40s. I've noticed that my strength and stamina is decreasing and general fatigue is increasing. Could you recommend some good core and upper body strength exercises I could do at home to maintain basic strength. Would this help my daily stamina as well? And that's from Barb.
So daily stamina is about getting up and about. So the best way to improve stamina is to get up and about. Sometimes it's difficult in the beginning. One of my favorite patients of all time was, it's actually been 25 years since I've seen him, so a long, long time ago, but he had difficulty due to back pain of walking more than 5 minutes. So I had him walk 3 minutes 10 times a day. So he would literally just get a timer out and walk for 3 minutes, sit down, rest, and not that type of thing. Over 6 weeks, he went from being able to do 3 minutes at a time to 10 minutes at a time. At 6 months, he was able to walk 30 minutes without pain.
Amazing.
Yeah. And so that's where I got the expression, do a little bit, a lot. So do a little doses frequently throughout the day for stamina purpose specifically. For core exercises, the ones that people typically miss, they think stomach muscles. So they set in to do crunches.
Yeah.
Crunches are not effective.
No.
Stomach exercises.
They hurt.
Yeah, they're not great.
Really?
So they also have been shown in some cases to be bad for your lower back. So there's a whole, it's flexing, bending the spine, and the discs in the back don't like that if you do it repeatedly. So a better exercise is something simple like a bridge where you lie on your back, bend your feet up, and then lift your bottom in the air. There's an exercise called a dead bug or a dying bug, and that's where you brace your abdominal area and then you move your feet up and down off the floor while you keep your stomach braced. And those are...
Wait a minute. I'm having trouble picturing this one. Explain it again.
Ray, just go ahead and lay on the floor.
No, I'm not doing that.
So lie on the floor and you bend your knees again. So you're like similar to doing a bridge, but this time you brace in your abdominal area, your core muscles.
Right.
So you tense up like someone's about to punch you in the belly. And you hold that, and then you bring your right foot off the ground, set it back down, and then bring your left foot off the ground, set it back down.
Okay.
So you're marching... I'm doing my fingers for all the people at home.
What you're doing is looking ridiculous, and I can only imagine what the exercise
yes.
looks like.
So the true dying bug is you have both feet in the air, and you have your hands in the air, and you alternate your arm with your feet, and you move, and there's plenty of evidence on social media and Facebook.
Why don't
and
we just
places,
move on?
YouTube.
C writes in, what does physical therapy look like post-laminectomy and microdiscectomy? Does swimming help? If so, how long after surgery should I begin?
So I'm a huge advocate of physical therapy post-surgery. So laminectomy, discectomy is to the lumbar spine typically, and it's just a surgery for someone who had a disc problem.
Yeah.
Yep. So the physical therapy afterwards helps to reestablish mobility safely and then to build the core muscles, doing the exercises like the dying bug that I just described and bridges and a whole series of other exercises, of course. And then from there, you just start to progress person back to normal function and build their strength more and more. As far as swimming, that is definitely going to depend on the wound. So it's usually scope. So you said microdiscectomy. So arthroscopic surgery, you're usually looking at 7 to 10 days to have the wound close, and then you can get into the water. Swimming is wonderful. However, it's in both cases, whether you're talking about exercise or swimming, it all depends on the person, and it all depends on how their back responds to it. So the blanket statement, like you should go swim, isn't accurate. If you go swim and you feel good, when you're swimming and when you get out, then yes, you should be swimming. And I did use the pool a lot in my one facility. I had a therapy pool, and I used it all the time for post-op, especially for spine. However, not everyone does well in water. Not everyone likes water. And the body, depending on the type of strokes you're doing in swimming, can be agitating to the spine.
You wouldn't want to do butterfly.
No.
What stroke would you do?
So if you had somebody who came out and they had a 10-year prior history of problems, then there could be all kinds of mechanical issues, meaning their joints don't move properly. They're compensating with their hips when they should be using back muscles. And so putting them in the water, it can magnify all those compensations and make the situation worse.
Oh, okay.
So it really depends on the situation. But as a general rule, yes, swimming is safe for spine, any joint. It's the water is great for the buoyancy purposes and all that. So that is a good source for exercise. But specifically for an individual, it's hard to say that's the best choice.
Matthew Goodemoto is our guest today on Vox Pop. It's physical therapy, and the number is 800-348-2551. Terry's in Goshen. Hello, Terry.
Hello, sir. How are you?
Good. You're on.
Okay. I was just calling. I get numbness in my left leg if I'm standing for, let's say, 45 minutes or longer. I play in a band.
Hmm.
So if we're standing, all of a sudden it'll get numb almost to the point of being painful, but then if I just bend, that we call it my guitar yoga, you know, that seems to solve things a little bit, or at least to lessen it a little bit. And I just didn't know if there was something I could do before that happened.
So where in the leg are you feeling the numbness?
It's like primarily the upper thigh, you know, it kind of burns. It almost feels like it's asleep.
Yep.
And then, like I say, it happens at other times, but that's what I do the most. So that's where I notice it the most. Yeah. But, and it's usually after, you know, standing for a fairly, I'd say 40, 45 minute time.
Yeah, you answered my second question. Does it happen any other time? So the other times that it happens, what type of position are you in? What kind of movement are you doing?
I'm usually standing. You know, I can't think of a, you know, like if I'm, I know, outside watching a ball game with my kids or whatever.
Yep.
And if I don't sit down, you know, after there comes a point where I can feel it coming on.
Okay, and it's primarily in the left
side,
leg?
Only left leg.
Okay. So the general thing for numbness is usually it indicates a nerve, and it, especially with the prolonged nature of what you're doing, the upper part would indicate a specific level in the lumbar spine to my brain. So that's like the L3, L4 area. And it's also possible, though, that a superficial nerve that comes around that area is getting hung up on something too. So the reason why it's important to identify the position you're in, and you said standing, but I would go deeper. So standing, where you're shifting your weight onto your left leg, or you're shifting your weight onto your right leg? Is the weight equally distributed? When you're standing, is your pelvis pushing forward, or are you slouching so it's pushing back? All those little details matter, because the longer you're in one position, they'll start to pinpoint what's the one that's actually provoking you. So it may not be standing per se. It could be how you're standing.
Even the guitar strap, or if you got a Les Paul and it's seven pounds, that's going to do it too.
Yeah. So exactly. All those little things are important. And then what can you do before? Well, there's a few things I would do ahead of time before you're playing in the band, or you're going to a game, and that's to take care of by doing some back exercises and doing general mobility exercises for the lumbar spine specifically. But I would also do it for the hip. So I would work on the muscles that go around the hip. They're gluteus muscles. And I would do stretches for the glutes. I would do stretches for a muscle called the psoas. The psoas is a muscle that actually goes down into your thigh, but it attaches in your lower back. It's spelled P-S-O-A-S, psoas.
Not like Suez Canal.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then I would do general stretches for the back, which would be, for example, prone on elbows, which is literally just lying down on your stomach and propping up on your elbows like you're a little kid watching TV. And then I would do different exercises, stretches for the glutes, stretches for the psoas, and then some back stretches. All of those things prior to your next time you're going to be playing. And if you get through the whole time playing and doesn't bother you, that's all you needed to do.
Wow, okay.
And if it doesn't, then I would try to get really detailed about what position you're in when you're standing, because that shift could mean, okay, you need to do this specific thing before you play, and when you do that, you'll feel fine.
Yeah, because I know if I just do a bend, like when it happens, if I just bend and hang my arms.
Yeah, but all that's doing is opening... That's opening up the vertebrae area, and it's fine to do temporary, especially like you're in the middle of, you know, a concert you got to play. Fair enough. But to prevent it, or to get out in front of this so it doesn't get significantly worse over time, address it before it happens and start doing those type of things preventatively. And in most cases, you're going to be able to resolve this.
Okay, great.
What kind of music do you do, Terry?
I'm bending over.
Yeah.
What kind of music?
We have a bluegrass, slow bluegrass.
Nice. Nice. Well, that's so it's slow by design, or is it
what we call it?
Slow by design, or slow because you guys are getting on in age?
Pretty much because we're getting on in age. So we're not going to do it the way you see anybody else. We call it Americana if we're really going to slow. You know, we'd never, a bluegrass band would never consider us bluegrass.
Well, I'm all in on the Americana. Good luck, man. Thanks for the call. 800-348-2551 is the number. Evan is in Albany. You're on with Matthew Goodemote.
Hey there.
Hey.
You're on.
Yeah, so I've been having chronic hamstring strains, I would say, over the past 10 years. I've had them so bad that they were bruised, and I was out for 2 to 3 weeks from soccer.
Uh-huh.
And I've had them so mild that I've been back after 2 or 3 days running. But the past stint that I've been on, I play about 60 minutes of soccer, and then I have what feels like a cramp, and then I'm kind of done for the game.
Yeah.
I've tried stretching, foam rolling, strengthening with hamstring curls and hip hinge movements, like on the back extension machine. And I'm kind of frustrated and running out of options. Was wondering if you had any advice for me.
Yeah. So the strengthening is a good trend to go towards. The most recent research on this is sprinting is one of the most effective ways to not only rehabilitate, but to prevent future problems with the hamstring. So the difficulty is in what you're experiencing, that if you try to do that day one, then you're probably just going to strain it and agitate it again. So in order of priority, it would start with make sure you have equal mobility. And I don't care at all about flexibility, especially with the hamstring. It's a terrible idea to do prolonged stretching. All that it's doing is making you more susceptible to re-injuring it. So mobility, just making sure you have motion, it feels loose and stuff, that's different. But to say stretch for 30 to 90 seconds and do that on a regular basis, if you've been doing that, stop doing that today and go to mobility, where the maximum you're holding a stretch is for 10 seconds. And I would do mobility, and I would do that regularly, but I would limit how long I'm holding so you're not doing flexibility. Number two is I would go into isometric strengthening. So I would, instead of doing, some of the things you mentioned are great, and I would do the same type of thing, but I would be focusing on isometrics, and I would be focusing on single leg. So when you're doing something like a deadlift, you should be doing single leg deadlifts, because if you're not, the good side's probably compensating, so you're not even getting the work that you think you are on the bad side. And certainly with the back extension you're describing, it's not likely you're actually recruiting it the way you hope you are. So the more single leg you can do, the more you can get specific about it. All that being said, they get the ends. So they're going to get the tendon by the knee, they're going to get the tendon by the butt, but the middle where you're having your issue, the only way to really get that is with sprinting. And so there's a whole series of progressions to get there, starting with basic things like skipping every practice, make sure you have a great dynamic warm-up, that type of thing, and then building up. And then once you get to the level where you can really like put out a full effort, you would want to do sprint training 1 to 2 days a week. But you would want to spend, you know, a dynamic warm-up, get your body going, then do the sprint work for literally 5 minutes, like 5 20-yard sprints, 100% effort, and you're done. Don't do anything else after. That's your rehab. That's your exercise. Start doing that twice a day. And there's a lot of data, and it's out of Canada and Australia in particular, about sprint training for hamstrings. So,
Evan, you good?
Yeah, that was great. Thank you very much.
Thanks for the call. 800-348-2551 is our number. It's Matthew Goodemote, Physical Therapy Today. Let's grab one more before the next break. And it's Ann in Kingston. Ann, you're on.
Thank you. Yes, I'm an older woman in my late 70s, and I don't have any particularly focal issues. But I was wondering in general, and I see this in people in my age group, you know, people get less steady on their feet and they start to have balance issues.
Yeah.
And I was wondering if you could comment on Pilates, especially for older people.
Pilates is great, and it's a great form of exercise. And as you mentioned, specifically for older people. However, I must say that the evidence is becoming more and more clear about the importance of strength training for older people. And when I say strength training, specifically lifting weights, strength training, and specifically for balance and specifically for function and to maintain your mobility as you get older. So although Pilates has a lot of benefits, often Pilates exercises are done lying down or sitting down.
Really?
Yeah, as far as I know.
You have to explain Pilates to me.
Well, there's a... Joseph Pilates was the inventor of it, and he had a machine, and it's a, I can't remember what it's called, where he just put me on the spot, and my brain had it, and it's gone.
I don't need to know the name of the machine.
Reformer.
I'm not going to do it, so
it's fine. Reformer, and on there, there's a tons of exercise, and it's great to maintain your mobility, your core strength, all those type of things. And what people misunderstand about the core is incredibly important, so I don't want to discount that. It is very, very important. However, so is walking. And so when people are going to go to do Pilates, and instead of doing like 3 miles of walking a day, they're going to get really good at Pilates, but their ability to walk isn't going to necessarily improve.
Uh-huh.
So the way the body works, it's what we call in its specificity of training. So the thing that you practice is the thing you get better at. So if you do the Pilates, you'll get better at Pilates. but it won't necessarily translate to being better with your balance. It won't necessarily translate to being better at squatting, going downstairs, getting in and out of a car, up and off the toilet, stuff like that.
Yeah.
So to do those things, the strength training and specific things like squats.
Yeah.
So I would have people at the clinic sit down in a chair and stand up, and when they could do that 10 times, I'd give them a weight. And I'd have them stand holding a weight. And when they could do that, I'd make the weight heavier. And so the reason, and I literally just had this conversation with my mom. So if you're listening, Mom, this is me talking to you. This is the value of doing every day, sit down, stand up as an exercise repeatedly, doing it 10 times, and it will have an unbelievable effect on function. And I would choose that over Pilates, Ray.
And we got to take a break here. 800-348-2551 is the number. It's Matthew Goodemote, and we'll be back with more of your calls and emails in a moment. Coltrane, Some Other Blues here on Vox Pop, 800-348-2551. That's the number. Matthew Goodemote is our guest on the program today. It's physical therapy. And Eileen in Rosendale writes, can you explain how strengthening and exercise benefits spinal stenosis? I thought spinal stenosis was a narrowing of the spinal column. And that's from Eileen in Rosendale.
She is 100% correct that it is a narrowing of the spinal canals. That's the definition of stenosis. Yeah. So the reason that strength training helps, there's a couple things. So first of all, I wouldn't assume that just because someone came in and they had stenosis for 20 years, that the amount of range of motion they have in the spine is all the range of motion they're ever going to get. And I would start with mobility exercises to maximize their range of motion. So with stenosis, what happens is people tend to slouch forward. They bend over.
Yeah.
So you've seen the older gentleman in particular, it's a classic kind of bent over gait. So I would work on trying to get them straight, knowing that there's going to be a limit because they have a narrowing of the canal. So it's only going to go so far, but doesn't mean it's hopeless. So I would establish that first of all. And then the strengthening part, as you're in a slouched or bent forward position, the back muscles, they're in a mechanically disadvantaged position. So it's harder for them to stay strong because they're being constantly fighting against gravity going the wrong way.
Right.
So when you do strengthening exercises, you A, can maintain and sometimes, and actually most times, improve where somebody is currently at. And the difference is, and this is the answer to her question, why do it? People with stenosis sometimes can stand for 10 or 15 minutes and they can walk for 5 or 10 minutes and then they have to stop or sit down because their back hurts too much.
Right.
So when you do these type of exercises, people go from 5 or 10 minutes of standing to 15 or 20 minutes of standing. They go from walking 5 or 10 minutes to 20 or 30 minutes of walking. So the amount of functional improvement and the ability, so the difference of walking, for example, it's getting from the grocery store through a lap of grocery store in 30 minutes compared to needing to sit down every 5 minutes. That's why it's so, so important to do that. And so strengthening is what helps to do that. It's mobility and strengthening.
Matthew Goodemote is our guest. Aaron in Greenfield, Mass. writes, I am 45. Suddenly I've developed significant numbness, weakness, and tingling in the left ring and pinky finger part of my hand that travels from the funny bone in my elbow. Doctor said it's ulnar neuropathy. Do you know anything I can do to help with that? And that's from Aaron in Greenfield.
Well, I have a rusty saw, so we could no. So the first thing, ulnar neuropathy, if the doctor is confirmed that it's not coming from the cervical spine, because the lower part of your cervical spine, the nerves travel through the ulnar canal and become the nerve distribution in the pinky and ring finger. So to, number one, be 100% certain there's nothing happening at the cervical spine, because if there is, I would address that directly. Number two is, depending on what's provoked this and caused this, you can do quite a bit of soft tissue work around the upper arm and the lower arm, the forearm, and do all the manual type of things you can. And in some cases, you'll start to get some relief of the symptoms. And there is a gazillion different types of stretches and exercises to do also that can be supportive of that.
All right. This is from Sue. Sue says, my sister bought me an ab lounge machine to work out my core muscles. Is this machine effective? It doesn't seem that it works that well. An ab lounge machine. My abs have been lounging for some time. Let me tell you something.
So the different, again, so people are at times confusing the appearance of a stomach muscle with a function of a stomach muscle. So the abdominal muscles, they do help you flex, which is what the ab lounger would do. And the amount of times you're going to do that in a day is how many times you're laying down in bed, getting out of bed, and or going to the bathroom at night or something like that. So like four times. But your abdominals are also vital for gait. And so those are not bending movements. Those are anti-bending movements, which would be something like a plank or doing exercises. Again, I mention this all the time because people are so fixated on the stomach, they forget that the glutes and back muscles are also part of your core. And then there's deep core muscles that are just through breathing and learning how to do the psoas is considered a core muscle. And that's not an exercise that, there's more effective ways to get it than doing the ab lounger.
Let me tell you something. If there is an exercise machine that has the word lounge in it, yes. I am all in on this. Yes. All right. Chris writes in, my 13-year-old son just started doing track and field this year, found himself doing shot put and liking it. Wow. What are two or three basic exercises he could do over the summer to help build strength for that sport?
So that's a power type of move. Number one is it's really, really, it's hard for me, Ray, to answer without, he needs someone to guide him on proper technique.
So you're not a shot putter?
No, not the movement. I'm not a shot putter, no. But for the strength exercises, my brain immediately said squats, deadlifts, and then there's the Olympic lifts and stuff. That's what a shot putter does. And those type of movements are what he should be doing over the summer. But without proper instruction, it's really hard for me to say that's what he should try on his own
right
at home. So at the Broad Auburn where I'm working with the athletes, I have them doing a lot of single leg strengthening. And part of the reason is it builds what's called proprioception. So helps your body tell where it is in space, which is help to prevent injuries and is help for athletic performance. And you don't risk lifting too heavy because you're using one leg or one arm. So people don't get into really bad technique that way. So for somebody like that, a young kid, he needs the fundamental movements, which are squats, lunges, okay, deadlifts, that type of things, bench press, shoulder press.
So everything.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah. But specifically, like for that movement, he's going to need squats. If you had to pick one, I can't pick one.
All right. last email, then we'll go back to the phones. Matthew Goodemot is our guest. This is from Kathleen. And Kathleen says, year ago, I was jogging 30 minutes a day, but I had never done any strength training because of my own ignorance. Since that time, I've been displaced, fallen with concussion, struggled with balance, and not yet resumed my basic exercise routine. I'm 74. Is there a reputable web source for physical therapy core exercises? Also, I have osteoporosis, and my thoracic spine feels numb, but also frequently very painful. Should I see a neurologist?
So the first question, the best way to address that would be the new fancy AI we have and using ChatGPT and put in evidence-based physical therapy sites.
Okay.
And they will have somebody out there. Will
so
have,
be discerning when you find that site.
For sure.
Do your homework.
Yeah.
Okay.
As far as it's always a good idea to see a neurologist with any type of tingling type of things that's potentially related to the spine, but that's also right up a PT's alley. And so there's different exercises that she should be doing on a regular basis to maintain the mobility in the spine that are safe and not dangerous for her condition. But it's hard for me to say don't see a neurologist. It's just I doubt there's anything major. It's just a common symptom that happens with the condition. So
Matthew Goodemot joins us today. It's physical therapy. Let's go back to the phones. Joyce is in Albany. Joyce, you're on.
Oh, hello. My question is, could physical therapy help someone who has really painful neuropathy particularly in their legs? It's not diabetes based.
Mm-hmm.
It is idiopathic.
Hmm. Yeah.
And
so for me, back in my glory days, it was one of my favorite patients to see because I wanted to make sure that the neuropathy, the idiopathic part of it, was in fact idiopathic. So I would evaluate the spine because it's one of those hidden ones that people just assume they have neuropathies and it doesn't have a cause to it because it doesn't. They don't have any back pain. They never had any back pain. How could it possibly be the back? So I just like to eliminate the back and then I would just work my way down the joints. And to answer the question, can physical therapy help in this? In a percentage of people, yes. It definitely can. There's been people who've been diagnosed with neuropathy today. I can remember as significant patients who got better. So I'm sure there are people out there who benefit. Whether you will be or not, I don't know. But you would want to find somebody who has experience working with it. And I believe it is definitely worth it. There's also techniques, manual techniques, and there's modalities. There's things like laser therapy that can be done to help increase blood flow, and that can sometimes help people with neuropathies. So it's worth trying.
Joyce, thanks a lot. What do you mean, back in your glory days? What does
Ray,
that mean?
My hair is turning white, and I'm getting.
Welcome to the club.
Yeah,
you're ambulatory. You're having fun, and I'm sure there are plenty of fine times ahead. Let's not be morose until the end of the show.
I think I was just thinking there was a period in my career where I was like, I can fix everything, Ray.
Right.
And I've aged and realized
that's usually false confidence that comes with youth.
Exactly. That's what I was referring to.
Let's go to Mindy in Millbrook. Mindy.
Hi.
Hi.
Hello?
Hello, you're on.
Hi. So I had taken a trip on a sidewalk. Definitely a proponent of only wearing sneakers now. And I went flying like an airplane. I fell on my elbow and my hip, on my elbow and knee, and my hip probably lodged into the socket. I was in a lot of pain, and it's been a few weeks. I'm doing physical therapy. I went to an osteopath, but I don't want to take Tylenol at night. The pain is getting less, but still sleeping is hard.
Yeah.
Do you recommend any kind of over-the-counter? Of course, I do heat, but anything else that will help at night with pain so I can sleep and heal?
So the kind of classic response I would give to somebody who had traumatic injuries, I'm a huge advocate of compression during the day because oftentimes the pain is caused from the swelling from the trauma.
Oh.
So I would look into that as an easy kind of low-hanging fruit type of solution. And then I would also do the things like the warm bath and all that kind of fun stuff to relax the muscles. Sometimes a good manual therapist and or acupuncturist can also help with those type of pain symptoms. So the joints, when you have like you described, an impact into the joint, they really respond well to movement. So if you've been doing movements and you're still having pain, I'm guessing that the bone, of course, can have some. But at 2 or 3 weeks out, that's usually getting better. So I would start with the compression, and then from there I would go through what I said to a good manual therapist.
Okay. And how do I do the compression?
So there's a whole bunch of real easy ones. So for the knees, they have just compression sleeves you can put over the knees. The hip is a little trickier. An ACE bandage would be the way to go with that. And the elbow, they also have sleeves that you can get at any sporting goods stores or pharmacies.
Mindy, thanks a lot. How do you know when you have too much compression? That always used to frighten me when I had to do that. I said, I want my leg to fall off.
That's a good point. So if you tighten it too much, and the discoloration is what happens, and or pain.
Yeah.
So if you have, let's just use the knee as an example, and you wrap it too tight, then your foot will start to swell. It'll turn different shades.
That's not good.
That is not good. And it'll turn different shades, colors too. And if it ever gets purple below where the bandage is, it is clearly too tight and you're cutting off circulation like a tourniquet.
Well, if you put it on when you go to bed, I mean, do you think that's...
So not at bed. Good. I'm glad that came up. So I wouldn't wear compression at bed. I would do it during the day to get ahead of the compression.
Gotcha.
So a compression sleeve that you're getting off the shelf, those are really unlikely to cause any significant injury.
Yeah.
What their worst they could do is they would fold up and they would pinch your skin, so you'd get a skin irritation or something like that. An ACE bandage, though, that's not a good idea if you don't like a therapist or athletic trainer.
If you don't know what you're doing.
Yeah.
All right. Let's go to Andrew in Clifton Park. Andrew, you're on with Matthew Goodemote.
Hi. How you doing?
Good.
A couple weeks ago, I crashed my dirt bike, fractured my scapula, and I know I'm going to be having some physical therapy coming up. I was just wondering, If you could give me like an estimate on like recovery time and possible exercises that I could be expecting.
Did you have when the scapula broke? Did it have, was it displaced or was like a fracture in it? So was it in two like distinct pieces? Was there any kind of other significant?
No, I think okay. they diagnosed me with a closed fracture.
Yeah. Okay.
Like it wasn't
yep.
broken all the way through.
Yeah. Okay.
That's a shoulder?
Shoulder blade.
Okay.
Is a scapula. Yep. So that's a very important piece. So the general healing for the good news is there's good blood supply, so it's going to heal pretty rapidly. Generally speaking, fractures heal 4 to 6 weeks or 6 to 8 weeks. As we get older, it can be 8 to 12. But but for the scapula, it's all about movement. And the bigger concern is that you start to lose range of motion in the shoulder joint. And that's because every time you move your shoulder, your scapula, your shoulder blade has to move with it. So that's the reason for PT and 100% go, because you do not want to get a restriction in your scapula because it will affect a lot of function afterwards. And generally speaking, yeah. the answer to your question directly is it depends on how quickly you get mobility back. Because if you have full range of motion in all directions and you have that on week one of therapy, it's going to be a couple weeks.
Okay.
If you don't have that, it's going okay. to be as long as it takes to get that back, which could be weeks.
Noticed already that my range of motion has improved. Before,
yeah.
I could only lift my hand like 5 inches off my side, but
yeah.
now I can get to like, I don't know, maybe like a foot and a half or so. But
yep.
I'm physically fit as it is. I'm 35.
Yeah.
I try to go to the gym at least 5 days a week anyway.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping that's going to help my
it
recovery
will.
Time.
It definitely will. It's All really right. just what I said. So it's like that in most joint related or fracture related issues. If you have your full range of motion, then it's just a product of building your strength back up. And if you've already been somebody who's been working
okay.
out, that comes real quick.
All right, only about 45 seconds. Let's go to Rafi in Poughkeepsie. Rafi, you're on.
Yes, hello. Thank you for taking my call.
You bet.
I love your program.
Thank
I've
you.
Been listening to it for all this time, and I think I got a lot of advice already. For my question about recovery from running, feet, specifically the feet, Achilles heel, plantar fasciitis, nothing like that, but just mainly, you know, running 30 miles a week.
Yep.
I'm 62 years old. So what do you think? I've been doing like hot and cold. What do you think of those specific
plunges
for recovery?
For recovery, the thing I like best with recovery is actually compression. And then after that, deep water type of things.
What
because
do you mean
that's
deep water?
So a pool.
Ah.
Just getting in the pool, if you have access to a pool, because those are the type of things keep blood flow going and they help to mitigate swelling. Plunges are fine. Ice and ice baths are fine. I'm just not a huge, it's okay. It's
okay.
not better than something else. Compression is the most effective.
Rafi, thanks. We're out of time. Would you ever jump in a bucket of ice water? I see this on TV.
When I was in Portugal, Ray, we had a pool that was not heated and it was springtime and I went in it every morning and it was about 50 degrees.
I would need to see a cardiologist
yes.
very, very
yes.
fast. All right, man, how do people find you on the internet?
The best way is just my website, which is Goodemote SP. So my last name, Goodemote, and then the letters SP as in sportsperformance.com.
So you're booked again, right? We have you on the show.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
You're going to come the day before and walk
yes,
around
yes.
too?
Yes.
Hey, man, thanks a lot for
thanks,
being
Ray.
Here, Matthew Goodemote. Support comes from the Olana Partnership, guided tours of the historic landscape and house Tuesday through Sunday at Olana State Historic Site. New farm tour now available. The Frederick Church Center for Art and Landscape now open. Tours available Monday, May 26th, olana.org. Ballet Flowers and Design, Malta, New York, a family-owned garden center and flower farm offering landscape, wedding design services, perennials, annuals, herbs, and interactive classes, balletflowers.com. And Capital Region Language Center, celebrating 22 years by inviting all alumni for an around-the-world celebration of food and fun, June 12th, 5 to 7 p.m., crlcalbany.org to register. Once again, thanks to physical therapist Matthew Goodemote for being here. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Andrea Leong screened the calls. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, it's astronomy. Bob Berman and Valerie Rapson. You and the heavens will see it too.